traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
We got the legend killer.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Randy Orton.
Dude, yeah. I knew what the RKO was before I knew about you.
The memes. Somebody started doing those things, and whoever it is, thank you so much.
Elon.
Yeah. Thank you, Elon.
On your Wikipedia, you're widely regarded as one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. What does that mean to you?
That you read that off Wikipedia and it doesn't mean anything?
Do you think at some point in your career you were a dick?
Yes.
My dad gave your kids Prime?
At a show.
No way.
Yeah, yeah. He said he was your dad. I don't know if it's dad or not.
That could have been anybody.
Yeah, it's very true.
That could have been anybody.
Where was it? Where was the show?
Well, it was a show you were at.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was, of course. I'm pretty sure it was somebody related to you.
Okay? Maybe.
Yo, whose idea of a sick joke is this headphone setup? My head's going to snap.
Are we rolling? We are rolling.
It's right. Like, I got RKO.
Left and a right, does it matter?
Not really.
I can give you a little more slack for
it.
If you have dyslexia, wear them backwards, and then it'll actually forget it.
I like the beginning of the shows.
They feel chill, relaxed. Dude, look at this. What kind of structural design 88 created this? Non-flexible.
Come on,
look at this, bro.
These are hardworking, impulsive employees.
Oh, it was you? Oh, my bad. No, my bad, dude. It's choking me, bro.
Yeah, whatever he wants to talk about.
No, he's good.
We got no Prime energy.
Oh, God, dude.
I was forced to drink.
Oh,
we're falling apart.
It's like a fucking earthquake.
It's just crazy. Oh, man. I just got off the jet. Sounds off.
You gotta be shit.
Sounds off.
Man. This is why we're not the number one podcast in the world, bro.
We used to be.
I'm out, dude. I can't do this show deaf. Whose idea was that, bro? What kind of prank shit?
Hold up. Let me, Randy, before you put those on, let me just make sure we're not gonna get our eardrums blown out.
Holy shit, bro.
Can you turn down his a little bit? You gotta protect those ears. That's Randy Orton.
Oh, they're fucking gone.
Years of the crowd just cheering so loud.
I'm so scared right now to put
maybe
these
even,
back on.
Right there.
Okay.
We're rolling all this. I don't care.
Yeah, fucking do it.
I don't care. Look, I just got off the jet. We came here. We're in Brooklyn, which is...
It's great. Yeah. A great township.
My shoes aren't even tied. I changed my pants in the elevator to come see Randy Orton. We got a legend. Actually, no. We got the legend killer on the show today. He's the Viper. He was the youngest champion in WWE history. I am honored to have you on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Randy Orton.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Of course, man.
Yeah. Dude, thanks for having me on.
You are massive. You are a massive human.
That's funny you say that, considering all the guys you've met in the back. There's some big boys back there.
It is cool walking around the backstage of WWE and seeing all these people that are like actual legitimate
giants.
Like cartoon characters, giants. Like
giants.
Yeah, in real life.
Well, have you met Omos?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Biggest guy I've ever seen in
and
my life.
And one of the nicest guys in the world.
And isn't that a nice like duo?
Yeah.
Like he could rip you limb from limb, but he's the nicest guy.
Do you think that... I was thinking about this the other day. I was in an elevator, and I'm 6'3", so you know it happens to me a little bit rarely.
You're a big boy.
Yeah, but somebody came in, and they were like 6'6".
Right.
And I automatically felt a little bit like emasculated by that. Do you think height is a major driver of male confidence?
I mean, so being tall myself, like I'm glad I'm tall.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think the answer would be yes.
Napoleon would say otherwise.
Yeah, he would, wouldn't he? But I think Omos is walking around just about as confident to be. But he's taking pictures with my kids. And I mean, having a 6-year-old stand next to a 7'4", 400-pound man, that's quite a discrepancy there. It's an awesome picture.
You would think that height often equates to confidence, but actually the one thing that I was watching on the plane right here was the evolution of a predator, your documentary that came out like 10 years ago.
Okay.
And I was surprised to hear that you weren't that confident of a kid. Even at 19 years old, you said you were working in a gas station, the night shift at a gas station.
Sure.
I just can't see that.
Yeah, no, even now I think I have, when I walk through the curtain, there's a certain part of me that changes and switches. And I've had thousands and thousands of matches, and I've gotten to, over time, just kind of hone, I guess, the skill of being able to turn into that character, you know, when I go into the ring,
step through the curtain. You're just turning it on.
Yeah, I'm not like walking around every day. You know, I think I had a chip on my shoulder when I was in my 20s and I thought my shit didn't stink. And, you know, I might, that confidence was just like armor, you know. I think, you know, I get just as nervous before I go out there as anybody, you know.
I heard you say you get more nervous doing media. At least in the past.
In the past. Well, that doc was 10 years old. Yeah. A lot has changed. Like, that's a lifetime ago.
Yeah, for sure. But still, it's fascinating to me because as someone who's very new to this,
sure,
I'm watching where you were and are and how you began and, like, drawing the comparisons.
Of course.
You've personally reached out to me even during my WWE run thus far, and I really appreciated it, just giving me advice. And
yeah, man, you're doing some crazy stuff out there. But like, I mean, everybody I'm sure that you've had on that's in our business tells you how amazing you're doing.
I don't need to be gassed up, but
I know you don't, and I'm not gonna. But I gotta point out, the little things that you're doing at this point already, the ability, and I think it was in Saudi Arabia. Is that where you work, Ray?
Yeah. No. Recently?
Recently, yeah.
Yeah, with Ray. Yeah.
Okay. So he did a spot with you.
Hold up. I'm sorry. Yeah. I get my fucking championship belt. My bad.
Yeah, I forgot that you were even US champ. I did. Yo,
very important.
My bad.
Because you haven't talked about it or shown it on any pictures in a long time.
When I beat Ray fair and square in Saudi Arabia. Yeah.
That's wild.
So anyways, continue complimenting me.
You caught him. You caught him out of midair when you were a little farther back. He came up a little short on like a springboard moonsault or something.
Yep.
But you got under him.
Yep.
And you saved him. You saved the spot. And the way you got down on your hips, the hip mobility and the strength and the way you got up with him, and he's not the biggest cat, but the predicament you were in and the way you got out of it was amazing. A lot of guys, you know, wouldn't have been there for that. I've seen guys, I'm not going to name any names, but I've seen guys that have, you know, completely missed guys or dropped guys in a situation like that. So the fact that you knew what to do and in a hundredth of a second you were there, that's impressive. That's all the gassing you up.
I was going to ask you if that deviates at all from what your feelings were before you had seen him perform, because you guys have had a number of celebs and entertainers come into the league over the years.
For sure.
Social media influencers.
For sure.
And obviously not the case anymore, but when he was first coming in, he was at the time listed as a losing boxer. Has been state wrestler, considered by many to be controversial.
Did you make a list?
Doesn't talk to his mom enough, poor diet. A Washington Post article even listed him as the smallest penis in the influencer space.
They
the
list did not goes say on. That. Oh,
amazing.
Yep. How would they know that?
I don't know. What was your initial take on him prior?
I didn't know a lot about the Paul brothers, specifically Logan, other than what, so I've got five children, and my kids, you know, oh, Logan this, Logan that, Jake this, Jake that. So I had always heard his name in my household, but I wasn't too familiar. When you came backstage, I think the first time we met, you looked me in the eye. I could tell right away that you wanted to be there. I could tell right away, and I know, I'm sure a lot of guys have talked about respect in our business. I could tell, like, okay, like, I saw who Logan Paul was in that split second, and I was like, all right, he's good back here. I could just tell. I could just tell by the way you shook my hand, man, you know, that you were good to go. And then, of course, like as we were saying, you're getting better and better, and that's the way to go.
Trying, man. Trying to learn from the greats. I mean, your career has been amazing, and I look to all the superstars in the WWE, and I try to take what I can. And the one thing that I notice about you, and I think a lot of the fans know it and see it and resonate with it and love it, is like they can feel your passion. I think maybe a little more than everyone else when you're out there. You can feel that shift. Like even some of the things you do, you're going viral right now for that DDT where you were like, yeah. Where does that come from? What is that?
I don't know, man. So it's like that fire inside of you, and I just let it out. It's hard to explain. It's kind of, so a lot of guys, it's weird talking about putting matches together. Back in the day, we would never be sitting here talking to each other, talking about how we put shit together. Mm. But when you have so many things you're thinking about ahead of time, like all those things with Ray, you had them burned in.
For sure.
It's hard to kind of be in the moment. If you go out there, if you and me went out there and we had nothing laid out except for kind of, you know, a beginning, a middle, and an end, there'd be a lot of gaps to fill. There'd be plenty of time to be in the moment. For me, not having all these spots, if you will, to remember, it gives you the ability to be in the moment and be out there and actually listen to the people. Mm. What we do is kind of, you know, get a temperature for the crowd, and we can adjust on the fly. We can pivot when we want. When you have everything laid out, well, it's a choreographed Dancing with the Stars. You know, I know where I'm going to be at this point in the match, and oh, he's got to duck this, duck that. Here we go, over the top, through the table, da da da. You have the whole match laid out. You're probably sleeping the night before, dreaming about those spots. You'll get to a level eventually where you can go out there with some guys, and you can show up an hour before the show, talk very limitedly, and then go out there, and then those people are going to get something else. They're not going to get maybe the athleticism from a Randy Orton that they would from a Logan Paul, but what I can bring to the table is that emotion. And what a lot of guys, when you say that it's a little different with me than other guys, it's because I think most of those other guys are just thinking about what's next. So that's the difference.
That is the expert level in professional wrestling.
And I learned that coming in when I was 19, I signed with the WWE. So I'm like the only guy that's never left and come back. Well, other than John Cena. But like, I'm going to be here for the rest, you know, this is me. Like, I'm not moving on to Hollywood. I love what I do. I just had 18 months off recovering from a spinal fusion. So I was kind of faced with the fact that I might not be able to do this again. So it's almost like I got a second lease on my career here, and I'm not going to take a day for granted, not a second in that ring for granted. And so now, even now, more so than, you know, the matches you would have seen like a year ago when you first started, or a couple of years ago when you first started, like, I'm feeling even more in my element now.
I mean, you're looking it too, Randy. I gotta say, the fans are going crazy on Twitter. You're tan, you're yoked. You look probably the best you ever have, arguably.
Yeah, I changed a lot of stuff off this last 18 months. I really needed the time. I had a lot of, you know, ailments. Of course, I mean, I couldn't stand for more than a couple of minutes without having pain shoot down my legs. When I would sit, I had a disc that was slipping every time I would bend. So, you know, on a plane sitting here, my feet would go numb and I'd have pain shooting down my legs. Oh, it really sucked. It really was hard. That last year before I had to leave because of the back, I was in a tag team with former WWE superstar Matt Riddle. And I got to give him props, because that year we tagged together, I was not able to be in that ring unless I was in there with someone like him. Because he was able to take the brunt of the physicality. He'd tag me at the end. I'd come in, I'd do my shit. And, you know, if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have made it that far. But I had some great doctors. They fixed me up right. They didn't cut through any muscle, which would enable me to get back in the ring. Because once you start cutting muscle, like, that's never going to heal back. Like, it's you're done. So I'm just blessed all the way around. And blessed to have learned, like, the little tidbit of knowledge I gave from you. I learned that from guys like Triple H, Shawn Michaels, The Undertaker. And I'm so lucky to have gotten into the business when I did.
Hey, as you guys know, I'm engaged now. Look at me. Thanks, man. And with the holidays around the corner, every gift has to be that much more special when you're shopping for holiday gifts for a loved one. Don't you want your gift to feel lasting and special, not something she'll have stopped using by next year?
Yes.
Any holiday season can come become an unforgettable celebration with a jewelry gift from Blue Nile. As the original online jeweler, Blue Nile has some of the highest quality standards in the industry. They have thousands of diamonds that are independently graded and ethically sourced. And Blue Nile's fine jewelry is priced well below traditional retail. Plus, their gift shopping experience is first class with non-commissioned jewelry experts on hand 24/7 via phone or chat to help you find exactly what you're looking for. No one wants to be driving around town looking for a last-minute gift to find the store is closed or the item you want gone. So Blue Nile offers peace of mind with each purchase with a diamond price match guarantee and 30-day returns. And your gift won't just stun when she unwraps it. It'll sparkle for years to come. BlueNile.com to save up to 50% on stunning jewelry gifts already priced below traditional retail. That's up to 50% site-wide at BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com. Back to Randy Orton.
Bet that'll make her want to let you stuff her stocking.
Back to Randy Orton.
Yeah. Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Yeah, you told me you're only as good as your last match.
And, yeah.
And you don't need to go off to the top ropes and
that was the DM, right?
The DM,
yeah. You're leaving it all out there in the ring, man, and you've got so much going on for you. You know, there's always another one.
It's so funny though, because this is hilarious. When you said that to me, and even now, like, I'm taking the advice. I hear you, but you know, I still want to.
Oh, you're like,
you jump
that
off the highest thing I can find.
I'm going to leave it all out there. I know you are.
And then in this documentary that I watched from 13 years ago, I heard you say the same thing.
Yeah.
When Arn Anderson was like, buddy, you don't got to go as hard as you're going. This is like longevity game.
Right. Well, and that's kind of my big thing is, how long can I do it? Mm. I'm already the longest tenured WWE superstar in history. And it sounds weird because I'm 43, but I just got started early. Not that I'm a spring chicken or anything now, but I still feel like I got a lot of gas in the tank. Longevity is everything for me. I was one of the first guys to start, traveling by bus. Like, you know, guys rent cars, jump in a car 4 deep and they're driving 300 miles a night. Your body can't recover. The longer, you know, the more bumps you take, the more time you need to recover, the more you have to, you know, look at those things. So when I'm home, I got a team at home, and I'm able to get everything I need to get done so that I can recover and be ready for that next show.
On your Wikipedia, you talk about this career spanning 20 years. You're widely regarded as one of the greatest professional wrestlers of all time. That's a burden and a pressure. What does that mean to you?
That you read that off Wikipedia.
I was like, why did you cite your source?
And it doesn't mean anything.
Stupid. Anyone could have wrote that.
It was in quotes. It has to mean something.
True.
But your response to that, it's pretty obvious as to how you feel about it.
I've got my favorites. Everyone's got their favorite. Well, so what I was going to say is everyone's got their favorites. I have no doubt. There is a healthy amount of people out there that consider for me to be one of the best, but then there's a lot of guys out there that I'm not in their Mount Rushmore.
Well, let's look at the scoreboard. You've got 14 belts, correct?
What world titles? Sure.
Too short of the record for most belts.
Is that what
of
it
all
is?
Time? I think it's 16.
Is that Flair or Cena?
There's a tie.
That's a tie.
Correct.
So I might be tied with Hunter then at 14 too. Do I think he has 14 world titles?
Does that would you like to hold that record? Is it possible at this point in your career?
I want to do everything I can, man. You know, longevity is always the number one goal for me, and being able to go home, play with my kids, and not be in pain, right? That'd be the ultimate goal. But, you know, as many accomplishments as I can accomplish in this, you know, in WWE, that I just, the more the better. I've already done so much so far. It's kind of nice being in a position where I can watch other guys' matches and maybe critique and help and answer questions. And so for the first time in my career, I find myself being a little bit of, gosh, I don't even want to say the word. You know, I guess a mentor to some people, you know, like I can pull a guy aside, kind of like I DM'd you, you know, I was like, hey man, careful, you know, don't go out there and end up in a wheelchair. You got a lot of shit going on, you know, you would
be doing a lot of podcasts only.
Podcasts only. Exactly. like you always got to be thinking of that next one.
Well, I can tell you, I appreciate the advice, and like that knowledge only comes from people who have done it and done it at the highest level. The way that you have developed since you started is also highly interesting. It's really cool to hear that this passion sort of like developed for wrestling, especially because you're a third generation wrestler. I don't know if you know this. Grandfather wrestled, father wrestled, massive wrestlers and very successful in their career, except you didn't have that feeling to want to go do it, even though it was, you know, in the lineage. And then all of a sudden, what changed that made you want to do this, you know, forever and be Randy Orton?
Yeah, growing up in the business, I was always around it. And I wasn't necessarily a fan until I was, you know, later on in high school. And then, you know, I started watching pay-per-views. But I never, like in 98, you know, I was a junior and senior in high school. And I'd watch, this is when Goldberg was doing his thing. And the undefeated streak.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'd get with my buddies and I'd watch Goldberg, jackhammer, you know, a guy through the ring. Oh my God, Goldberg. Mm. And, you know, I'm 18 years old. Little did I know 4 years later, I'd be wrestling the guy.
Insane.
Like I still, it blows my mind. But I never saw myself doing it. My buddies would ask me and, you know, back to that confidence, I never, ever thought that I could do what my dad did. Never.
I gotta ask the why, man. You're 6 foot, like what, 4, 230? It seems like everything's there. The puzzle's there.
It was all up here, you know. Physically, I felt like, as far as an athlete, I came into my own, you know, after I started training for wrestling. You know, I'd played sports, you know, my whole life, but I never really excelled in any one thing. I amateur wrestled from the fourth grade up through high school, but then I dropped it to play basketball. I should have stuck with it.
Yeah, but you went to state twice.
I did. Yeah, I had a successful amateur wrestling career in high school, but like, you know, as far as some of these guys, I mean, I'm Kurt Angle, Olympic gold medalist.
Brock Lesnar.
Brock, you know, and the list goes on. Yeah. Shelton Benjamin, all these guys, they come from, you know, athletic. I can never dream of being the athlete that they were. So especially back then, like if anyone knew that I couldn't do it, it was me, you know. And I think what happened is I gave the military a shot, and that didn't go too well.
And then talk about that.
And then the you know, working midnights at the gas station, that wasn't as much fun as I thought it would be. legitimate. I'm 19 and I'm like, hey dad, what do you think?
Yeah.
Could you give somebody a call? Could I give this wrestling thing? And he's like, oh son, our name's been blackballed from this business. I'm like, what? And I guess, you know, he used to get in a little bit of trouble. My uncle wrestled as well. Rest in peace, Uncle Barry. But you know, so he didn't think they were going to welcome me with open arms or anything. And it was the opposite. In fact, they were like, oh my God, Bob, you got a son? Jesus. And my father still is highly regarded as one of the best back in his generation. So for him to have a kid, and at the time, I believe the only other generational guy was The Rock, really, that was making any waves as a third generation superstar. So, you know, here's another third generation superstar, Bruce Pritchard, Vince McMahon, all those guys, they looked at that and were like, okay, let's start training this guy, see what we can get. And that's where the confidence started to grow.
I mean, the people you were training with are among, like, literally the best that the business has ever had. Man. John Cena, Batista.
I was so blessed to be down there with guys like that. Batista, Shelton Benjamin was down there.
Was Lesnar there at one point?
Oh, Lesnar. Oh, yeah. I remember the day he came. We were all like, what the fuck?
What is that?
Yeah, yeah. I remember. we're all talking shit, you know, under our breath. And here he comes. And back then, there wasn't all, you know, we had one ring and a shitty warehouse, and there was like 12 of us. So here comes Lesnar. We knew he was coming. We get in practice. We start doing the rope running drills where you just, you know, you just burn, you just go. And he didn't hook the top rope. As I'm sure you've been told, make sure you get the arm over that top rope. Otherwise, you're going to end up in the bleachers. And sure enough, that motherfucker, he leapt out of the ring between the second and third rope and took out like 20 metal chairs. And then just popped up, dusted himself off, and was like, I bet y'all would like to see that again. And we were like, it's cool, you know, do your thing, you know. But like, yeah, I was down there with some amazing athletes and I learned so much.
Do you think that talent exists today? Like, where are the people that look like you and John Cena and Batista and Brock Lesnar? We got Austin Theory. He's pretty ripped.
What is it, just a size thing that you're talking about?
No, I don't know.
Look at the athleticism right now, bro.
I think
the athleticism, true, but.
Well, I think there's a lot of guys that get it. There's a lot of guys that get it. I almost don't want to start naming names because then I'll feel bad. I'll leave out, you know, a lot of guys. And the list is too long as far as, like, guys we got now that could be great one day. Mm. You know, it's amazing, man. If you look back at Stone Cold Steve Austin when he was Stunning Steve before he became Stone Cold Steve Austin, as you know, he looked a little different.
Yeah.
He moved a little different. He had long blonde hair.
Yeah.
He wasn't the same Stone Cold Steve Austin. You never know, man. We got a lot of gems in the back, and it's just going to take, you know, the right amount of pressure to turn him into a diamond, man.
That's one of the coolest things about this business is the ability to evolve and have these arcs. Even recently with Dominic Mysterio,
oh my God.
I'm so proud of him because I did my first WrestleMania against him and Ray.
Right.
And I remember thinking, like, how is this kid going to get out of his dad's shadow? Like, nothing about him, as far as I can tell right now, is like super wow factor. And then he just grew out that mullet and became the most hated person in the W. I think the longer the mullet is directly correlated to the heat.
I think it's all because of the mullet. I really do. 100%. No, so his dad and I are tight. And you've worked with Ray. You met Ray. Ray's, you know, he's probably the only guy back there that's friendlier than Omos, you know. Ray took care of me back in the day, and for me, so I wrestled Dom last Friday night on Raw. I don't know if you guys saw it or not.
For sure.
But it was such a pleasure to be out there with him and to just to get to be out there knowing, like, oh my God, I know your dad's at home watching. Like, I want to make your dad proud.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was a great feeling. I am so proud of Dom as well. And I know exactly what you're talking about. When he first started coming up and Ray brought him around, it's like, oh,
what do we do?
This kid needs another fucking 10 years. And you know, he needs to go fight in a war or something and come back grizzled. like there was something about him.
Well, he did get the tattoos.
The tattoos helped.
And don't forget the mullet.
Yeah, well, of course. But like, it's just, he's got it now.
But it happened so quick.
It did.
It happened really quick for him.
Did.
I think the feud with his dad.
Oh, well
that was it.
That,
right?
Set it off. And I remember that night, and I texted Ray and Dom that night. I want to say he either clotheslined his father or kicked his dad in the nuts, but Ray is such a lovable guy. And for him to, you know, and we all grew up 20 years ago, fans saw Dominic on television. He was involved in storylines.
Yeah.
So everyone saw this cute little kid, man. And now here he is, and he's disrespecting his father, whom we adore. Yeah, boo.
Still to this day, after I took the U.S. title off of Rey Mysterio, which I did in Saudi Arabia.
U.S. champ.
It's U.S. champ right there. I said to Dom backstage, I was like, your dad's a legend, man. He goes, yeah, fuck that guy.
isn't him finding his, like, zone similarly to you just a testament of, like, having to try shit in life? Like, you tried, this is for the audience watching, even the people that aren't, for some reason, WWE fans, you had this confidence issue. Maybe Dom had this confidence issue. You know, you tried basketball, you tried, you know, working the night shift at the gas station, and then you found your thing because you tried it, because you went against everything that your lack of confidence told you inside your, no disrespect, massive fucking head,
right?
Which was I'm too scared, or I'm not good enough, or I don't have the ability to do this. and you did it anyways.
Right.
And that first step led you to getting a little bit of experience, a little bit of credibility, which then led you to getting that confidence, you know, which is such a beautiful ladder and storyline for life. And can you only imagine if you hadn't?
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Taking that first step and how important that is to your journey.
Yeah, no, it's all about taking that first leap, doing something that you're scared to do. And I try to, you know, teach my kids, especially my older sons, that like you gotta do what's uncomfortable sometimes, you know, like you have to make yourself uncomfortable. And when your body's in that state, when your mind's in that state, that's when you grow, that's when you learn, that's when you become resilient. You know, who likes going to the gym? You know, if you enjoy going to the gym, you're probably not doing it right. You're probably going to the gym.
That just hit me hard.
You're probably going to the gym when everyone gets off work and the girls are in there and you're like, yeah, hey, you know. But if you're in the dungeon and you're by yourself and you're sweating with your homie and you guys are pushing through it and you're working and you're not in there 3 hours, but you're in there an hour and a half, but you're going balls to the wall. I'm sure, like with the boxing training, like you know the difference between training and training.
Dude, I don't like training. I've always been vocal about that.
It really sucks.
It's hard.
The payoff, that separates the men from the boys. Mm-hmm. That's where you find out who's who.
And I found extreme pleasure in that. That's the motivating factor for
of
me.
Of course.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm in there. I don't want to be in there, but that jumping that hurdle will pay off in substantial ways in the future. And I know that, and it keeps me going.
Yeah, hell yeah.
How did you develop the RKO?
So did you ever meet John Laurinaitis? So he was head of talent relations for the majority of my career. He used to do a move called the Ace Crusher, very, very similar to the RKO. Diamond Dallas Page, who I'm sure you're familiar with, he did the Diamond Cutter. Both those moves inspired me in one way or another for me to come up with the RKO. And essentially what it was is I blew my shoulders out early in my career. I've had 3 shoulder operations. So if you can go back, and very rarely will you ever see me pick a guy up. Like, if you look in the last 10 years, other than like a Rey Mysterio or a Dom, I don't pick guys up. I don't do power moves. I don't.
It's like a mobility thing?
Yeah, it's just me because I don't need to do it.
Okay.
So I could pick up a guy and slam him. My shoulders are healthy and fine. But when I blew him out early on in my head, I got it to where, okay, I got to protect my shoulders. So I go way overboard in protecting my shoulders because, you know, I don't want to be on the shelf with another shoulder injury. Mm. But I know that I don't need to do it. I think, shit, I forget where I was going there. But
Diamond Dallas Page, shoulders, you don't pick guys up.
How you develop that.
So I needed a move that I could do to everybody that didn't that I could do, you know, Rey Mysterio or Omos or...
Yep.
We're like, what is it?
Crossing swords.
Crossing swords.
Sorry.
That's all right. Sorry. No biggie.
No, he didn't want to say it. You can say it.
Yeah.
He's just the host, so he likes to keep it, you know, kosher.
Cross swords all day with you, Logan.
Thanks, Randy.
Yeah, yeah. Are we on? Is this live?
This is live.
But yeah, you know, I wanted to be able to do that, you know, finishing move to everybody.
Yeah.
And that was the best choice.
Dude, it's so good. When I was running around my amateur high school wrestling room,
right,
the kids before practice,
sure,
are running around RKOing the shit out of each other.
Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
I knew what the RKO was before I knew about you. Like, right. like the, right. the move in many ways like has this life of its own.
Yeah.
And to have a finisher that significant has got to feel awesome. Like,
it really does.
It's hard to come up with something that
significant to work backwards and be like, I want to do something this special, but what does it look like? And like, I'm in that developmental.
I feel like what's really cool about this place is you can't really do that. You can't work backwards with something like that. You can sure as hell try, and you can maybe get lucky, but a lot of the things that happen in our business that like catch fire with the fans, I feel like it's organic.
Super.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's what like, it's what I found.
I was just looking for a move that I could do to everybody. In my head, did I go, "Oh, I'm gonna tailor make this move to be the biggest thing, the biggest move in the WWE?" And no, I was just like, "Man, what can I do where I ain't gonna hurt myself?"
And I apply it to everybody. Anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a simple, like
it is it
relatively. Is. Once again, no disrespect.
It's a cutter. No, hell no.
Comparatively, I grew up watching like Ahmed Johnson. The Pearl River Plunge is like a freaking insane, like
right.
lifting over the back of the head, dropping right. move.
Yeah,
and it, like you know, it's oddly enough, a lot of the biggest finishers, like the Tombstone. Are relatively like simple, I just think explosive.
That's, I think that's part
awesome.
Of it.
It's, yeah, because
like you can recreate it.
Yes, I was just
gonna
say
basement.
That on the pillows.
That's very true. It's you know if you got a pool in the backyard, all the kids can do it in the pool, mm-hmm. the trampoline, under off the couch, under the you know the cushions on the floor. I think that's a very good point.
It's the
honestly
only
that might be my starting point.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
How can people recreate?
Make it
this?
Simple.
Right. Right.
I think it's the only trending TikTok sound. That a WWE finish.
I what had a
look out.
I had one of my most viral vines.
Yeah. Yeah.
The soundtrack was it. Look out! It's Randy Orton slithering in. Watch out! And I did it to my friend. I did it to my friend Marcus Johns into a pool. One of my most viewed vines of all time.
That's really cool to know. Yeah. And you know, so that's another thing. It wasn't all just me. Like you said, you knew about the RKO before you knew who I was, and that it was essentially my initials. The memes that took on. I mean, like 10 years ago, I feel like somebody out there, whoever it is, thank you so much. But somebody started doing those things and memes, and they started making them. Just popping up. What'd you say?
Elon Musk.
It was Elon. Yeah. Thank you, Elon. building rockets. Let me make this meme.
Later, Elon.
Yeah, yeah. But like, it just, you know, I said earlier I was blessed, you know, to get, you know, born into this, get the opportunity through my father, you know, same with the memes, like just that boosted up my character and made me more important, made my value, you know, my brand more important. Like a lot of people do a cutter, but, you know, when I hit mine, it's like, oh, that's the cutter.
It's one of the things that I think also differentiates you from other superstars is like you have infiltrated culture in a really like internet specific way.
Sure,
That works. Even just your last performance at War Games.
Right.
Like, dude, it's all I'm seeing is just Randy Orton stuff. Randy Orton's return. Right. Even though, as soon as I saw, I was like, this is he's back, another moment.
What's funny about what you're talking about, the as soon as that dropped, like, I think my wife sent it to me, and then one of my sons sent it to me, and then I'm sending it to my mom, My mom's laughing, and sent it to my aunt, so I know exactly what you're talking
about. It's so organic and easy to send. I'm going to do it, Randy.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it, ga-ga-ga-ga-ga.
Yeah, do it, baby.
You're up. Your RKOs, just want to put a button on this. Of them are incredible. You did one at War Games against the bobblehead guy.
JD.
Yeah, JD. Sorry, bro.
No, he knows. I just met him Saturday in Chicago, and he was very well aware that he had a large head.
Yeah.
Yeah, he knew.
Some people are just built like that. Anyway.
Right, right.
And then the one
built different. Built different.
Built different, brother. You're built different.
Yeah.
The one... Seth Rollins, that was one of the coolest ones. It's got to be one of your favorites. Yeah, where he stepped on your back.
It's up there. Yeah, yeah. And I can't. So when it comes to the timing, I'll take the credit on that. But when it comes to getting there, I got to give all that credit to Seth. You know, I gave him a base to jump off of, but he had to run towards me, redirect, go straight up off the back, and. Give me enough hang time, give himself enough hang time, I should say, for me to go from being bent way the fuck over to getting out from underneath, seeing him and dropping. And if he would have been just a little off, the whole move would have not went down Or if it went down, it wouldn't have been pretty, you know, and it would have been on me. You know, I would have took the criticism on that. So I got to give guys like Seth and all the other guys that have done the springboards in where I catch them, and even JD, bobblehead JD.
It was great.
I watch
that move a lot with JD. And sure. Even just the way he just flat stomach bumped is insane from the top of the cage.
Right, yeah. I've never been able to, never will be able to do that. For sure.
Does anybody ever ask you to RKO him in public places? Like, if
all the time.
While we were walking up here, he's like, I want Randy to RKO me.
We should. I mean,
do these cushions come off? We could make a little area in the corner over there.
Like at bars, if you're, you probably don't go to bars very much. You're a family man. Yeah. But you know, Whole Foods, for example.
Oh yeah.
In the granola aisle, does anyone
all
ever?
All the time. Yeah. No. My oldest daughter, Alana, plays varsity volleyball. And because it was on the tail end of my recovery, I was able to go and watch a lot of her games this season. And I mean, we're at high schools, a lot of the high school kids will go, and you know, I was taking pictures and signing autographs for the high school kids, and they were great, right? Very respectful. Always. You know, every 5 minutes, you know, hey man, RKO me, because they wanted it.
And then all their friends are.
Whoa, God! They want to get. Yeah, as a matter of fact, like in between volleyball sets, a big huddle of high school kids went down on the court, and I saw it in my peripheral. I didn't know what was going on, and I kind of just at the last second I caught it. But one kid RKO'd the other kid on the court, and then ESPN the high school like journalist. Kid was taking the video, right? He posted it, asked my permission, but like ESPN picked it up, Sports Center picked it up, because when he's filming his friends do the RKO, then they zoom in on me.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and I'm kind of like, you know, picking my nose. I'm like, you know, and I just give a thumbs up, and it's like, you know, the voice in the background, when you RKO your friend in front of Randy Orton, you know, I get asked a lot.
Social media, even right there, you just kind of evidenced it, has helped your career a lot. What are your thoughts on social media from a more holistic standpoint? Do the kids all have Instagram accounts? What age did they get them at?
Okay, so
on and so forth.
Yeah, talking about my kids, of course. So my oldest is 21.
Yep.
So he's doing his thing. He actually graduates from New York Film Academy in a week, two
Gorgeous.
Weeks.
Cool.
Yeah,
congrats,
yeah.
Congrats.
So yeah, he's right down the street as we speak. My younger kids, no. My 6-year-old, she just turned 7. Her name's Brooklyn. She's got her iPad, you know, and I hate admitting this on air, but like, it's a hell of a tool when you need to get something done.
I've been vocal.
And it's like, hey, here's the iPad. Yeah. And then, you know, here's the iPad. And then here's the iPad. Next thing you know, it's like, hey, give me the iPad. And she turns into the devil. And it's like, oh, what have I done? I'm a bad parent. But I think it's just a crutch that us parents kind of find ourselves needing.
What was the TV?
Nowadays.
It was Sesame Street at one point. Yeah. There's always been a tool. Well, don't beat yourself up too bad.
Yeah. And I won't. Trust me.
If you wanted to.
I wouldn't be able to feel any of those punches. They'd be so good, man.
I was at a dinner the other night, and there were kids playing with real toys at the table, like multiple. And I thought, wow, that's crazy. Recently, I've just been seeing parents hand their kids like an iPad or something, and I actually don't think there's anything wrong with that, especially because like the way technology is evolving. If you can have a technologically savvy young adult. Especially because kids are getting smarter faster.
Yeah, I agree.
Have you noticed that phenomenon?
100%. And I think like with the YouTube and the social media and stuff, it's like an attention span thing. Mm. But I feel like, you know, they want that reward quickly. You know, it feels like. And then, you know, swipe, reward. Swipe,
well, that's a problem because
that's the problem. But as far as what you're talking about. You know, I can tell that she kind of gets it. You know, when she was very young, the fact that she could go into the settings and change this, and that was impressive.
It's impressive
to me, you know, and I feel like, you know, finger dexterity and things like that. And I play video games myself.
Right now?
Yeah, brother.
What do you play? What do you play?
So that Call of Duty drop, I'm playing the zombies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the new zombies.
The Warzone zombies or whatever. But I'm also like 50 hours deep into Starfield.
Nice.
Yeah, it's cool. You know what? My wife's amazing. She gives me that, you know, that good hour a night.
Dude, I was going to say, how does the wife feel about
She's cool. She don't mind. Oh, yeah. She don't mind.
She'll definitely tells you to get off it at some point.
Well, so here's the thing. I'll hand her the iPad and then she'll start buying. I'm sorry, Kim. And then she'll start going through Amazon buying shit and she's happy. So
on your credit cards,
of course.
Fine.
But I was gonna say for you or for your wife with the iPad, it's a little bit different because you talked about kids like learning faster nowadays. The downside and the detriment is there's a massive study just came out recently from the workforce that these employers are looking at these youthful employees coming in. They don't know how to make eye contact. They don't know any of the general rules of in-person conversation. They were born looking at screens. They look at screens on Zoom all day. They learn through screens. And they don't have the general functionality that is needed for day-to-day conversation. And so, well, kids are learning fast nowadays. They're also unlearning some very, very important...
I would agree.
Tactical life skills.
Yeah, and I see it, too. I see it, too. It's kind of scary, but it's also like we're evolving and things are changing. And like, look, I don't want to sit here. Like when I was a kid, you know, I'd go outside and I'd, you know, like.
But how much of that is needed? How much, like, trust me, I'm as far as advancements go, I'm a relatively liberal person in terms of the world changes, people changes, like catch up or get left behind. But like, how much do we have to defend some rightful need to go outside?
Well,
you know, like.
And then the pandemic really screwed all those kids up. Like my daughter was she two or three? God, we had to go. We went to Disney World and I'm thinking like, you know, I'll do this VIP gimmick and we'll get taken care of. Like, man, we were in masks, couldn't take them down to take pictures. And just the fact that she couldn't even go there and she had to cover up and, you know, just like being in school, she went to a Montessori school and, you know, up until she was four and, you know, not being able to see the teachers' faces and not being able to be as social.
It really depersonalizes.
Yeah. And I'm talking pandemic, but then like you add during the pandemic, you know, all these devices in their hands and then they're just mask on, head down, you know, going iPad crazy. Like it is a little scary. I think the whole social, you know, just being socially awkward, you know, that's
anxiety.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a really big, it's funny. There's that show or doc called The Social Experiment. That's what it is. We are living in it. We are the social experiment.
Of course.
This is the testing grounds for a whole new way of life and a whole new, you know, evolution of our species where we are now part man, part machine.
Right.
And I think the only thing you really can do is try to have some sort of oversight on what they're looking at. Like if your 14-year-old kid or 12-year-old kid is spending time on X, formerly known as Twitter,
right,
they are watching video after video of school shootings, of beatdowns in schools, knifings, terrible, terrible stuff. I mean, at that age, I was watching Doug Funny and Rugrats or whatever, you know, whatever was the next at 12 or 14, you know, probably something else. But I guess you really have to kind of monitor what's on that screen.
Yeah, like you said, oversight, like who's deciding what's okay. Well I think it's the parents, you know. Like,
has to be.
But when it comes to the kids, and you just have to be vigilant and know what they're watching, you know, like, gosh, you know, I remember when I was a kid, when I was, you know, probably 12, 13, you know, I used to go get my haircut at my grandpa's barber, you know, and he'd take me every couple of weeks and I'd get my haircut and there was a couple of Playboys.
Mm. Well, for sure.
Yeah. Rip a page out, fold it up, tuck it. You know, and I think over the course of the few years, I had a half a dozen Playboy centerfolds.
You got to see a couple boobs.
And I got to see some boobs.
But like, look at what the access is. Now, like, even in that same note, it's like, I would go to the video store and sneak into the back section. They'd have this section called Faces of Death.
Right. Oh, I remember Faces of Death.
Gore, yeah. You know, section where you could potentially see someone get a limb severed, but you'd have to sneak it, hide it, like this and that.
Right.
Now, you just open the most popular social media engine on the planet, and you're looking at, there's women in the room, but you're looking at much deeper than Playboy type things.
Deeper, good word.
Yeah, deeper than Playboy. And you're looking at, you know, all kinds of stuff. So, I think oversight is really the important thing. But now you're a good parent.
Oh, yeah.
You're now a role model. Well, you're a role model. You're, you know, an icon in the sport. But were you always?
No.
I want to ask you some vulnerable questions. Do you think at some point in your career you were a dick?
Yes. Yeah. 100%. I 100%. But that was like, excuse me. That was like my armor. I was a asshole, I think, because I wanted people to respect me, maybe. I don't know. I just know that I grew out of that phase, and I thank God that I did. But I see like footage, you know, that I didn't know the camera was rolling, maybe at that autograph signing, and there's an interaction with a fan, and it's picked up, and then now they're doing this doc on A&E that they just kind of are finishing up, and I've seen some of this footage from 10, 15 years ago, and I'm like, oh my God, like, that's horrible, you know? But like, that's just kind of who I was. It wasn't coming from a place of confidence. I think it was coming from a place of like, it was my armor, man. Like that I was an asshole, and maybe I would get respect that way. Maybe it was a little bit of fear and I took it as respect, and either way I was fine with it, you know? But luckily I was given a second, third, fourth chance, you know, from Vince McMahon coming up when I would get in trouble, or I would have to, you know, get sent away for a couple months, or I would have to get fined a second or third time. And I just blessed, like I am so blessed. I just had the right guys in there to kind of, you know, yank my ass straight and make sure that I was walking a straight line with the times that I did veer off.
Triple H was one of those.
Oh yeah. 100%.
He was that rock, it seemed like, for Shawn Michaels as well.
Yes.
So it's crazy. He just seems like just a stellar human as a friend and now a boss.
He is. He's very smart, but you know, with the business smart. Mm-hmm. Like, you have any questions with wrestling, you go to him.
Yeah.
And then you're going to get a good answer. Or at least it's going to, you know, spark, you know, something of your own to come out of the woodwork. But as far as like a human being, like, I went to his wedding. I've kind of seen him evolve, and he has three girls, and his oldest girl is just a few years older than mine. So we have that in common. But I think recently for him, because he had the health scare and everything, I think he realizes how important time, family time is. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that has changed. I think, you know, back in the day, you know, you were missing birthdays, you were missing anniversaries, you were missing holidays, you know, and there was no either way about it. Like, you were going to miss, you wouldn't even ask for off. Now, there's leniency there. Mm. Now, he'll make sure that you can get home for the birth of your baby, or he'll make sure that you can get home for that birthday, because he understands now how important that is. And I think company-wide, that's been a change for the better.
Yeah, absolutely. No, he's a great leader, man. He is the boss, but he doesn't feel like a boss.
Does not feel like a boss.
Feels like a collaborator.
Well, so he was one of the boys. You know, when I was introduced to him, you know, when I was 20, he was one of the boys. And to me, he'll always be more so one of the boys than purely office. And I think that's because I know that I can trust him and that he's going to steer me in the right way. Mm-hmm. So, and that's usually, you know, you got your clique of guys that you know have your back. Mm-hmm. You know, he's one of those guys for me.
I know you have a time limit. The last thing I want to ask before we get you out of here for SmackDown tonight is, I know you're big with the troops. I know you are a massive troop supporter. You spend a lot of time there. Is that because of the time you spent in the military? Is it just respect you have for people defending our country?
It has nothing to do with the time that I spent in the military. But being involved with the Tribute to the Troops shows and the things that we've done and meeting our troops, especially when we flew over to the Middle East, like, I was 25, 26, 27, and we were flying over there, like, like we were in the middle of it. It was pretty intense, but Vince was right there with us. And, you know, we like slept in one of Saddam's son's palaces, you know, that they had taken over, conquered, emptied out and turned into a forward operating base. And now we're like sleeping in this giant room with like gold trim on the ceilings and 40-foot, you know, entryways, like just going over there and seeing that and seeing like, you know, how hard those people had it and how, you know, our guys were over there helping out and putting their life on the line to do so. Like anybody out there that's putting their life on the line for other people, like how could you not have just the utmost respect for them? So yeah. So whenever I get an opportunity to do something with the military or for the military, more than happy. But my passion more so lies in the kids and meeting the Make-A-Wish kids and just knowing how much of an effect I have on meeting just a regular 10-year-old in the street that might recognize me. If I give him eight seconds of my time and make eye contact, shake his hand, ask his name, what's your name? Wait, what was it? With a B or a, okay, cool. Yeah. Nice to meet you, man. They won't forget that.
Changes their life.
It does.
And, 8 seconds of your time.
And I can see it on their face, yep. And it warms my heart. And, you know, I'm getting a little soft, and I got the kids at home, and I understand, like, how important that is for them and for their parents. And just, like, so I love the Make-A-Wish kids and the kids in general and it's how we touch them.
Very admirable, and I think important that a person in your position recognizes that they have that kind of impact on people.
Sure.
Because it's relatively effortless, right?
It is.
You literally give 8 seconds.
It is.
His life's changed.
And where I changed, I think, a lot from the asshole I used to be is I didn't used to recognize that power that I had, you know? And now I do, you know? And it is a good thing.
That's all that matters.
Yeah, man.
Randy Orton, it's been a goddamn pleasure. We could go for 3 hours, man, and I'd love to just continue the conversation backstage and just keep chopping it up, man.
For sure.
Maybe we get a match in there one day.
I think so, man.
It'd be an honor. If you want this belt, yo, good luck. You ain't gonna get it, but
you can have.
He's got 14 of them.
Yeah, you got way more. I got some catching up to do, but it's been an honor, dude. I'll see you tonight at SmackDown, ladies and gentlemen. Randy freaking Orton.
Thanks, guys.
Of course, man. I think that's it. I think that's it, bro. This was fantastic.
Yeah, I thought it went well. I appreciate you guys.
Yeah, do you remember doing the podcast where you sign out of the show and tell them to like and subscribe?
You guys want to like and subscribe? We'll see you next time.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.